Hey everyone, it's Chris from the podcast. Hey, how you doing? So today we're going to be taking a look at There Is No Beginning to the Story. This is an EP released in 2002, which preceded Lifted, kind of an epic grand statement, really, that Bright Eyes made later in the year. So a fantastic EP and really a fantastic record, which we can't wait to talk about. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the stylistic changes that they go through from the Fevers and Mirrors era, I guess you could call it, into Lifted. So before we do that, really do want to thank our patrons, our $5 tier, Mom and Goldie. Thanks so much. If you want to consider being a patron, check out connorsbasement.com. There's a little support tab, but, you know, no pressure. You do what you do. I'm not gonna lay it on too thick. So check us out, Instagram and Twitter, at Connor's Basement, and stick around for this episode.
All right, hello. Hello, welcome back. This is Pledge Week. We're here to raise money for this great radio program.
Oh, speak up. Come on. Where's the energy?
Excuse me.
This isn't public radio. This is a gosh dang podcast.
All right. I'm putting my cap on. I'm firing up the John Deere.
Hell yeah,
I'm cracking open a nice bud.
Hell yeah, brother.
Well, why don't we do a deep poetic deep dive into some gosh darn heckin' indie music as such people like myself enjoy.
Gosh darn heckin', huh? Today we will be looking at There Is No Beginning to the Story.
The bookshelf sinks into the sand.
And a language learned is forgotten, turned, and studied once again. So, There Is No Beginning to the Story. It is an EP released by, I believe the band is called The White Stripes, back in 2001, 2002, do we know, actually? That's a good question. We didn't do our research.
2002.
So this EP comes out before Lifted, or the full title, Lifted, or The Story Is in the Soil, Keep Your Ear to the Ground, which we're definitely, I mean, I'm hyped to talk about, but this episode is not about that album, but beautiful, beautiful record. And I will say, like, overall, you can already hear the change from Fevers and Mirrors to this is so drastic. I think way more drastic than Every Day and Every Night to Fevers and Mirrors. Like, we talked about how Every Day and Every Night felt like a bridge between the two. This feels a lot more all over the place, which I think it fits with Lifted, not so much with Fevers and Mirrors, which isn't a bad thing, just an observation.
Agreed. And I think the even like full album to full album, like if you were to go to Letting Off the Happiness to Fevers and Mirrors, it is a departure from a lot of things from Letting Off the Happiness. However, there is still there's more in common with Fevers and Mirrors and Letting Off the Happiness than there is certainly with Lifted and Fevers and Mirrors. I think that it is really just such a departure from the sound that we got from Fevers and Mirrors. To Lifted, it's quite wild. And I don't think that there is really much of the bridge between this album and the past one. I think, like, There Is No Beginning to the Story is a very, it signals a hard pivot, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it marks the beginning of much more exploration into the big band aspect that we hear, like this, the grand instrumentation and orchestras. I mean, obviously, Fevers and Mirrors had a lot of depth in the instrumentation in its own right. You had the accordion and the flute, like it had its character, but this kind of grandiose feeling really starts to come through on Lifted. I would say, like, past that point, it changes a little bit, right? Like, Digital Ash has its certain vibe, and maybe this is a little more in line with I'm Wide Awake
but then you get to Casadega, and Lifted and Casadega feel very similar because, again, they both explore that like auditory space in terms of the size of the sound and the instruments and that kind of thing. Non-physical size, obviously. They just had really, really big guitars. Like, they had three people trying to play.
I think that would be like a David Byrne thing. if David Byrne was to do a Bright Eyes music video, it's Conor Oberst in a giant tuxedo with a giant guitar and one tiny bright eye. Yeah, certainly. I think this is the start of, as you're saying, like playing around with something that I would call the more epic side or cinematic side of the Bright Eyes sound.
You always did love cinematic endings.
I did. I just packed my things one day. Yeah, like a Casadega definitely jumps to mind as far as like, I think the Casadega and Down in the Weeds, definitely this whole, there is something very bombastic and epic about mm-hmm. the way that orchestra is used and the way that really making use of the multi-instrumentalism of is it Mike Mogus who's the, like, he plays like basically everything, or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Mike yeah. Mogus is like the crazy mastermind behind it all.
And that really shines, and I think they're really starting to lean into that, especially starting with like No Beginning and Lifted. And mm-hmm. just, like I said, Casadega really, at least for like the first span of Bright Eyes before their like reunion after their hiatus, was the culmination of all of that.
And, you know, not to belabor this point, but maybe even to a lesser degree, People's Key. I know, obviously, it lacks in terms of real instruments. And I'm not saying, like, there are no real instruments on it. But what I'm saying is maybe, you know, they traded in some of the orchestra and the horns and that kind of stuff for how can we make something big and bombastic, but make it all digital and make it all sci-fi, because I think that was like one of the things I remember when that was coming out. I don't know who said it, but they said it was the greatest sci-fi emo album of all time.
I would agree yeah. with that.
Well, back on There's No Beginning to the Story, I just because it's right in front of me and it's not in front of you because you still haven't grabbed your milk crate of vinyls, as you say, I think in every episode thus far.
I think I have been saying this since day one. And even if I do go and get it, I am going to continue making this a joke.
But so I'm looking at the vinyl, and I love the album art, which, you know, Zach Nipper has done and probably will continue to do every single Bright Eyes album cover. And this is a diorama. So, you know, Sewing Machine was out, making these little animal figures chasing someone in the woods or in the forest, the jungle, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And then in the back, they have them cornered. So, you know, obviously on like Spotify and stuff, you only see the front. On the back, the person is kind of falling down, holding themselves up by their left arm, shielding themselves with their right, while the lion and other vicious animal, which I'll call a hyena
or maybe a wolf.
Yeah, I like that one.
Stay
better.
With me, Arionette, until I like the wolves that one are away.
instead of a freaking hyena, they have them cornered as they try to shield themselves. So it's kind of grim, you know, which is, it fits the theme of what we expect from Bright Eyes.
It does. But I don't know. Does it? I mean, I will jump into this and maybe there is something obvious that I'm completely missing here. But does it thematically have anything to do with what's happening in the EP?
My guess is that it will fit more thematically with Lifted than with this album, this EP rather. You know, my first thought, and this is, as you know, having listened to Lifted and not gone as in depth, I mean, we talked about on Fevers and Mirrors or how like how much more we found out when we did this and we like really went in depth. So I'm totally ready for my ideas on Lifted to change, but like maybe it is something about, oh my God, I got, oh, ho, 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 ho. All right, ready?
That's the sound of a big brain firing.
Yeah, oh, it sure is. I have a friend who's mostly made of pain. You know, he wakes up, tries to work, and straight back home again. He once cut one of my nightmares out of a paper. I thought it was beautiful and put it on a record cover. Now, as I say that, he did say cut it out of paper, but maybe this is, and this is a diorama, so not cut out of paper, but like, I wonder if this is maybe one of Connor's nightmares, you know, being chased through the woods by animals. You have nothing left to defend yourself with, and you know, the animals could be any stand-in for any kind of problem or fear that you have. So even if like Waste of Paint, on which is a song on Lifted, isn't directly referencing this album cover, but maybe it just kind of fits with that same theme of Zach being able to tap into Connor's psyche or something.
Yeah, or maybe just the like what those kind of conversations would sound like, of the collaboration of, well, what do you want this, you know, I have these ideas, what are you thinking for a cover, and like those kind of, can you take like you did before turning I'm assuming it's a reference to the cover for that one, right? That's what it's in reference to.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I know from Zach Nipper has a Tumblr, which is really interesting. If you're, you know, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, he has some information that like things that you wouldn't know about like the process of making an album or making the covers and that kind of thing. And a lot of the work that he does is with paper when he makes things. I down in the weeds, he cut those little like humanoid shapes out of
paper.
I love
those little shapes too. Yeah. I think that album cover is fantastic. All of them are, but I do really like Down in the Weeds.
Yeah, for sure. And so he cut those out of paper. So maybe I think that makes sense, like what you say, every day and every night, because that is another kind of unsettling album cover. And you know, it really kind of like catches you like, oh God, spooky skeletons. It is spooky month. Spooky skeletons going through the forest. But it could just be just a reference, like kind of like what you said earlier, just to like the process of generally he's making these things out of paper. And it you know, it doesn't have to fit word for word, line for line, exactly the experience. It's the overall. So yeah, I think, you know, we've talk a little bit now, I guess, in terms of where this kind of fits sonically with everything else, and kind of that album cover and how it maybe we'll see exactly how it will fit in with Lifted, which is obviously EP preceding it. Now really kind of interested to take a look at the songs. And I think, again, you know, not to continually compare it to Every Day and Every Night, overall, it's thematically that felt like a good bridge between Letting Off the Happiness and Fevers and Mirrors.
Yes.
Here, it is a little bit more all over the place, I guess I'd say. Like, it doesn't, it feels like Every Day and Every Night, if you just listen to that, you could get a story. And whereas maybe for this EP, it kind of feels like the songs could just be loose leaves with the story in the soil, and you're just picking up random pages. And each page you're like, yeah, this could be a song on here. And that page, this could be a song on there. And so there's no coherent story, but you have the random pages that are kind of making up the full story. And so my stupid jokes aside, let's get into the first song, From a Balance Beam, which we kind of talked about, like, how do we want to approach this? For those unaware, From a Balance Beam is a song on Lifted, so which is, you know, the next album. So we were kind of talking about, like, how do we want to approach it? Well, this is part of the next album. Do we want to discuss it there? Do we want to discuss it here? But ultimately, we kind of landed on, like, let's talk about it. And if anything changes when we get to that episode, we can talk about those changes.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this will be our like initial thoughts, or at least as recent thoughts as we are going to have about an album that's 18 years old. So if anything should change in our listening of the full album, we'll just amend what we said. And otherwise we'll give like, I guess like our Spark Notes version of what we say here about Balance Beam.
Yeah. So with that being said, I mean, why don't you kick us off? What are you feeling? What are you feeling for this song, man?
I think that the song brings up a lot of the themes and motifs that we're going to see. As you say, and as I agree with, this EP seems kind of all over the place. There are some strings, there are some themes and motifs that run through all of the songs, or at least most of them, that do carry over to Lifted. And one of them that I'm seeing, and I may be a little off base here, is the use of sort of extreme simile and metaphor, and then that being tied back to something more personal. And whether it's the character Connor or the actual human person Connor Oberst, I'm sure we're gonna end up talking about this anyway, but the song opens with like this sort of weird stunt. I don't know if this is even supposed to be literal. Like, is Connor describing somebody with a megaphone, like some sort of street preacher with people actually suspended from cables and, you know, doing some sort of stunt.
Right.
As a way to sort of set up how ridiculous people can be when they get up on their soapboxes. Or is it supposed to be metaphorical? Is it just supposed to be somebody being overly, I don't know, like political or vocal about something? And then by the end of the song, we get that lovely line about, it was in a foreign hotel's bathtub. I baptized myself in change. One by one, I drowned all the people I had been. So it starts with like this really showy display of either an opinion or a belief, and it then slowly shrinks down to trying to get to the core of who he is, whether that's mm-hmm. him the writer or him the character. And I find that like most of the songs have that sort of theme or that story structure where it's the juxtaposition of the grand with the mundane or the personal.
I think to your point about the like the beginning, like what is it? Is it metaphorical? Is it literal? I did take it the more literal route, but I felt as if I took it from the perspective of two people seeing the same event and having drastically different feelings on what transpired. Almost like, well, in this, I take it as almost like what he believes is an ignorance of people blinding themselves, probably religious, because that's just, we know that from songs that he's written in the past. I wrote down like there's some shade there that he's pointing it out. But I also think about like children. If they saw people flying and they were attached to wires, like he sees that and he's like, what's the big deal? Like they're attached to wires and there's a pulley or something like that. But like to a 5-year-old kid, they're so enamored with the idea, like, oh my God, they're flying. Mm. And so that idea of it's a spectacle. No, it's a miracle. Like, what is it? And it all depends on who you are and what standpoint you're coming at it from. And I get the impression that our narrator is coming from it as like this is so overblown for it, you know? So that's kind of where I took it in that more literal way.
I would agree there. Maybe one thing that sways me as well is that I love how Connor delivers the last line of the first stanza. So I called 9-1, and there's like a pause between the first one and the second one, as if like, you know, when you're talking about something and you're distracted, so you just kind of slow down. You know how to finish the sentence, but you're just so you're so distracted by, and then there's like, as you're saying, this question of, is it a spectacle? Is it a miracle? And I don't know, is there much of a distinction there?
Right.
Can a miracle be anything other than a spectacle? I mean, by its nature, a miracle is spectacular.
Right. Yeah. Definite. Yeah.
Like, I don't know if anybody has a blasé reaction to a miracle. Yeah. You know, when Christ walked on water, was everyone like, yeah, ho hum. Yeah. Look at that. Probably, look at that, honestly, bearded homeless guy just walking on water.
Just another day. I mean, what else did they have to do? There was no TV. I mean, geez.
Yeah, I know. They were busy trying not to die at the age of 20.
I know. Dang. But moving on from there as well. And, you know, I do have something to say for the foreign hotel bathtub line. I'll get there. I tend to go like very almost like stanza by stanza or line by line with it. So after this like spectacle miracle part, we get into the titular part of the song. I fell like that girl from a balance beam. And I wonder here, like, is he maybe kind of calling back to those feelings on Fevers and Mirrors of like, I'm in the spotlight and feeling like you're messing up as some form of celebrity. And even the small mistakes, whereas maybe when you're unknown and you kind of screw up in a big way, your friends are like, hey, you know what? It's no big deal. You can do better next time. But when you're in the spotlight and you fall, there are people that are going to revel in it. There are people that are going to say, oh, that's just how it is. You get rich and famous and you become, you know, an asshole or like, you know, so there's like this, there's again, that difference of, I just kind of wish I could be, I tried to die young with my true love, ended up a millionaire, you know, as we hear him say years down the line on Gentleman's Pack. But so again, there's still that discomfort that he's continuing to bring up and something too that we continue to hear on Lifted. So I'm not saying like, oh, Connor, get over it, but it clearly is something that continues to stick with him past Fevers and Mirrors.
And I do like that comparison to, oh, or sorry, I'm thinking of a line from Fevers and Mirrors where he becomes a star above a bridge in his town. I think that it does a good job of, there's a progression where he's relating his being a spectacle to like his immediate area, to like his town. And now it seems a little bigger than that. He's using, instead of himself and his home as the stomping grounds for metaphor, he's employing simile here in a more poetic way. And I know I've definitely drawn this comparison before, and I hope it's not an unfair one, but I definitely get a Bob Dylan feel from, he's starting to feel a little more Bob Dylan as far as using more liberal poetics to describe feelings and ideas instead of saying I'm a star glowing in the dark above the bridge of my town. Let me try to give you a more generalized picture. And even if you don't know exactly what I'm talking about, the fact that I can clearly picture this tense moment of a gymnast fucking up in front of in a crowd of people definitely hits me a little more than the star glowing in the dark, as much as I love that imagery.
Well, it's okay to be objectively wrong, because clearly everything he says on Something Vague is perfect and infallible. So
yes. And I can trust you as a impartial third party observer with no dog in that race.
Not at all.
I trust everything you say.
Thank you. I think that's something even myself trying to write lyrics. And this is not to say like, oh, man, Connor used to write such immature lyrics, but like that ability to write from a place that's personal, but also find really compelling ways to make it universal. And even though it's still me, like you said, we can all picture that moment of a girl being ready, like about to fall in front of this gymnasium, and just like those feelings as both the spectator and the girl herself. So it's really awesome writing, and hell, that's why we're here. And speaking of really awesome writing, okay. Speaking of really awesome writing, I don't think I've heard anybody so consistently describe our universe like this beautifully. People will be like, oh, well, you know, Carl Sagan, and like, you know, hats off, obviously. I choose to worship a different god of the sky. His name is Connor. And there's another lyric that we'll get to in the future that is also planet related.
We'll edit
that out. And so he says, I'm staring at my wrist, hoping that the timing's right. When the planets will align, there will be no planets to align, just the carcass of the sun and those little painted marble spinning senseless through an endless black sky. Just like the internal rhyme and just the fluidity that line is delivered. It's just, it's so beautiful. It's in terms of how it's written, in terms of how it just sounds in your ear, even like music and melody stripped from it, even just hearing myself say it, obviously because my voice is beautiful, but also because of the sheer poetics of the lyric itself is mwah. We've said there's those chef's kiss moments. This is a chef's kiss moment for me.
Connor spits super hot fire. He's got bars.
He does have bars, man. I mean, I have a couple of other things from A Balance Beam. Spoiler alert, it is one of my favorite songs off of Lifted. So that's why I probably have a little more. But I want to give you a chance in case there are some other pieces that you want to tease out.
I don't really have too much more to say. I have a feeling like we definitely want to talk about, we maybe want to touch on the bathtub line.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would want to talk about after that is the last stanza and kind of tying it back to the more epic tone that we get with these, as we get closer to the bright eyes that we, I don't know. That seems wrong. I was going to say like the bright eyes that we know today, but everything they do is so different that almost feels like an incorrect thing to say. But I hope my meaning is made clear. Like, I think this is the first time that they're hitting their stride as far as what I think, like, my idea of a Bright Eyes album is, outside of my bias towards Fevers and Mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that maybe that's the conversation for another time. But I would, I guess, want to point out more the epic poetry that is prevalent throughout this EP and going to be in the next album.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I kind of have some stuff for basically some of the stanzas, I'd say, like blend together, but I kind of have pieces for each. But why don't you take us into the foreign hotel bathtub, just because that's the next part again off after the marbles line.
Yeah, it was in a foreign hotel's bathtub. I baptized myself in change, and one by one, I drowned all the people I had been. When I emerged, I emerged to find the parallels were fewer. I was cleansed. And the note that I have here is that this is, I think, a callback to the struggles in the previous albums and EPs of how do I reconcile the who I am literally as a human being versus who this persona of myself is, and what happens when, go back to the previous podcast where we wax philosophic about Connor either like using his persona to make art, or if it's the reverse that's happening. And just that nesting doll that we were talking about in previous episodes about like where his life begins and where the persona ends and how he's using these different sides of himself, whether we're talking about the character or the writer. I'm seeing a desire to sort of cut through that and get back to the core of who he is. Mm-hmm. And it feels kind of, let me be super pretentious here, very Sisyphusian. And I looked in the mirror and someone new was there. I mean, how long is it? It's sort of like doing like the Marie Kondo, like cleansing the apartment and like, ah, everything's clean. The clutter's gone. Everything's organized and nice and minimalistic. How long is it going to take until you've got the clutter back there? How long is it until you've got new vices and new personalities and new masks that, you know, you've got stored up for you to then want to go through this process again? One last thing I want to mention about this line too, before we continue for the rest of the song and move on to other songs in the album, is the one thing that I think kind of hints at this bringing that old, that struggle with these personas back in, is the fact that it's a foreign hotel and how, especially with what we just said about the balance beam line, about there being a bigger stage and be having that more of a presence with eyes on you. I could see this as being a reference to, I don't know, some real world event where Connor the person is on tour and having like a breakdown in a hotel and doing that thing we've all done at some point in our lives where we sit in a bathtub until like the water gets cold, like that kind of thing, you know? And just the fact that it's a foreign hotel bathtub, it signals to me that the character has a larger scope of the world rather than just like, you know, kid from garage band rockin' kid from Omaha. And then to, you know, yeah, I'm like still kind of a hometown kid, but now I'm on the radio, to now I'm using advanced metaphor and simile and I'm having a breakdown in this Beirut bathtub.
Beirut.
I don't know why I went there, but
it had some nice alliteration, I'll give you that much.
You know, yeah, I guess so. Like subconsciously I did the B noises. Yeah, that's my piece, I guess, for the rest of that, for that line.
I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you said. And going back to references, I think he pulls Patrick back in here.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, like I drowned all of the people I've been, foreign hotel bathtub. And we talked about how Patrick was, whether biographical or otherwise, was a vehicle for grief and loss and that kind of thing. And by drowning that part of you. And so by bringing that back, I think Connor is really trying to say, yeah, I am trying to move on from that past and from those memories that really, that hurt, you know, that I want to grow. I want to move on from who I was, maybe even moving back in a sense, because he has discussed, like, I wish I could feel the way I used to, you know, kind of a little bit more carefree, a little bit less inhibited, which is something too we'll hear on a future song, that same like kind of desire and that sort of thing. Moving on from there, you had mentioned you have some stuff for the final lines, as do I. And I think too, like, this is a really, really cool part of the song, because you have that kind of like switch up and there's kind of that marching drum sound, and you start to feel the build of what he's saying. And I really do wonder, like, what is he saying here? Like, is this him trying to say, like, the experiences that he's had, right? So I'll cut out my lover's tongue and sing of a graveyard gray. Like, all of his relationships and that kind of thing, he won't have to worry no more, won't have to wonder again. Like, all of these things, he's going to be fine, maybe financially in that security. But I wonder all everything else that goes along with it, because we already know there's that tug and pull of like, I'm sure he's very grateful for the life that he has, but maybe kind of wishing that it was something different. But what I think is interesting too, when he says he's going to cut out his lover's tongue, is he's saying that he gets the sole narrative here. He gets to say how the story ends. Won't have to wonder no more about how the song or story ends, because I'm the one with the microphone. I'm the one with the megaphone. And this is my spectacle.
I do think that your interpretation of that is really interesting. And that point about cutting out the lover's tongue. There is that sense of control here of, you know, a map and chart of stars is, are there guides made by other people? And a compass is a tool that, while it relies on the natural world, it's still like, these are all things that you need to rely on previous knowledge, whether it's your knowledge of how the world works or whether it's somebody's interpretation of the worlds that you're using. You know, this map was made by somebody else. These chart of stars, while the stars aren't really moving, you know, they're not going to change anytime soon. The chart of stars was made by another person. So I think the controlling of the narrative is interesting here. So I'm not going to use these tools. I'm not going to rely on like previous things that other people have done. And I am not even going to allow, you know, my potential lovers to change the narrative.
Yeah, for sure. It is a very kind of grim line, and I think that's what makes it so powerful. You know, and it's funny because you have it over this very like peppy sounding instrumental, and it's just like, yeah, gotta cut out my lover's tongue and sing. Woohoo! It's very strange.
Yeah, there is a huge tonal disparity there. I do think though that it lends it that epic quality to it, because there is something mythological about it definitely reads almost like a Greek myth of, you know, everyone knows those tropes of like the hero who has to make a great sacrifice. Or something so tragic happened to this character and they like stab their own eyes out. It feels very much in the vein of epic poetry to have to do a task like that, whether it's willing or not. This song ends so epically, and with that pumped up marching beat, and it definitely has an interesting lead then to the next song in the album, which kind of feels like a contradiction to these lyrics. So let's move on to Messenger Bird song, huh?
So for this song, it's actually not one that I really listened to before this. Like, I've heard it before. I have the CD, I have the vinyl, like I've listened to the song, but to be honest, like, it wasn't something that ended up on a rotation. I don't think I could have told you what it sounded like until I was like, okay, let's go through this EP, which is part of what I enjoy about doing this is it is making me really go through all the songs. And even as like a huge fan, like there are the blind spots and there are the songs that are missed on like EPs here and there. So that it's kind of fun, almost like discovering new bright eyes in 2020, even after the new album came out. But I really do enjoy the song, and I get vibes that will mimic a song on Lifted, which is you will. I don't know how many there are. And like this kind of like, okay, go away, you know, fuck around, and then come back. You know, like go explore those other women, the geography of their bodies. And again, like this kind of like exploration, he's on tour now. He's going all over the world. Like, and there's this girl back home that he, and again, you know, we say it every time, maybe we should just put a disclaimer in the beginning of every episode, like character Connor is like pining over this woman. Like he loves her to a fault, even like probably emotionally overinvested. And she just kind of seems to take advantage of the fact that every time he comes back, she's probably the first one that he wants to see. And like, okay, like you're going to get me off and then you got to go get out of here and I'll see you again in 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I made an ironic note here. I just have one of my notes is just King Simp. And I think it's for the line that you were just referencing. I know that you like to go stanza by stanza, but I do like to jump around a bit. You said
you know, don't... I'll follow you. I'll jump around with you this time, Jesse.
Do it, my friend. We're gonna have a wet and wild time slopping around.
I will.
You said you don't want me to beg. Then you said get down on your knees because you knew that I would if I do any good satisfying your needs. And I think that that's a perfect summary of this relationship of saying one thing and then demanding another. And continuing this cycle of an unhealthy relationship on both ends.
For sure.
We have that old issue of the protagonist looking to a woman as the fixer. You're going to solve all my problems. If I just have a romantic enough gesture and beg of you for this comfort, then I will be fixed and made pure again, which is not helped by this person who is just like, okay, cool, go down on me and then go away, please. as you said before.
Yeah.
And it is really paralleled with these truly beautiful lines, like that whole stanza that starts, you were the blue of the sky. That whole stanza is just gorgeous. And it's told to who I can only imagine is a massive piece of shit. So...
You know, hey, you know, that's an assumption. Relationships fail often due to a lack of honest communication. And maybe there was a miscommunication. I'm just being snarky anyway, by the way. And maybe it was a miscommunication where, you know, they agreed up front, like no strings attached. And this dumbass fell in love. Like, come on, dude.
But, caught feelings like a king, like the King Simp he is.
Like King Simp. Yeah. Obviously being like tongue in cheek and all that. But like, so, you know, there is obviously a lack of honest communication. And I think that that's where this whole like nod your head if the plans have changed, shake it love if they stayed the same. Kind of like, please just don't leave me guessing. You know, he says it right there. And because of that lack of communication, he's become overinvested. Again, he's looking to her to fix him while she is hands off and it really is seemingly taking advantage of the fact that he's more in love than she is. So, you know, not trying to sit up here and say like, who's right, who's wrong. They're both wrong. Well, they're both right or anything like that. But, you know, these are just like the facts of the situation as they've been presented. But as we heard on the last song, again, like From a Balance Beam fits more with Lifted, the album, than probably this EP. But he does say he'll cut out his lover's tongue. So again, is this a biased point of view? Is this Connor's point of view of the situation, and maybe it wasn't quite like that, but you know, we have a biased narrator that lives in our head, and sometimes we let that kind of overtake.
I mean, clearly this evil, wicked woman is taking advantage of a very good man, and this just makes me upset, frankly.
Maybe we're King Simp.
Oh God, am I King Simp? No, it's the children who are wrong.
Yeah. And I guess like one other, I guess two small details that I have for the song. One is kind of a wish. And I really think I think it's a banjo. I probably should have checked. I almost thought that it was going to continue to grow and you were going to hear the drums come in and like bring something more, kind of like when the curious girl realizes she's under glass again, you know, that version of the song. It would be so cool to have Messenger Bird song part two, where it's the same thing, but like you get that extra instrumentation. Like I felt like I wanted that, not to say there's anything wrong with it in its current form, but the way my brain went was like, okay, and then here the drums are. And then I paused and was like, oh, I guess not. And I felt like a fool. So that was one little note that I had. And the last one that I have too, and I've been trying to find the best way to put this. I just think that the way Connor sings about sex in his songs is very
go on.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's kind of tongue in cheek, no pun intended, huh? Yeah. But because the way that he says it in this song, you said one of them said, "Don't want me to beg, then get down on your knees, because you knew that it would, if I do any good, satisfying your needs." And it is very clear to us what that sounds like. But it also doesn't feel that jarring. In some songs, he's jarring, and I think it works. But in this one, it's kind of hidden. It's like a joke for adults in SpongeBob, that kind of like wink, wink, like, ah, the kids won't get this, but you will. Whereas like some listeners, they might not hear it until like that second or third time. You're like, oh, shoot, satisfying your needs. He was talking about going down. And then there the other one. And so he does it again. Actually, this happens before the last one. So you made me come, then you sent me away.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's two ways to read that, right? Like you made me come over, satisfy you, and then told me to get the hell out. But you absolutely could read that as you made me come and then said, get out of my bed. I'm sleeping alone tonight. I have work early in the morning. So again, it's like that kind of like, you might not hear it that way the first time, or you might hear it one way and not the other, that kind of dual meaning. I think it's really interesting the way that he talks about sex in his songs. And I appreciate that from my simp king. King simp.
we need to make a t-shirt now. Like, remember when they put out the, when Desaparecidos came out again, and they had the t-shirts that said deport Connor Oberst, but it was Tim Kasher's face on it. We should do like King Simp and like and like Connor's face or something, or like we'll just do the album art where it's me, you, and Connor, but just our faces, and just like on a black t-shirt, and it just says King Simp.
King Simps.
I think that that's what makes his songwriting so strong as well. And I think that it kind of goes back to what I was saying before about, I think that his lyric writing is now getting to the point where using this like layered, more poetic language makes for these more interesting interactions between like the writer and the listener / reader. I don't think that I picked up on the innuendo as much. And so I definitely had the first time certainly read get down on your knees as far as like begging. And now I see it's both. It's begging, right? And yeah, like, and maybe like, I'm obviously not saying that going down on someone that you're in a relationship with is the same thing as like begging or being servile or anything like that. That was all I wanted to say about this song. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's all I had for that one. So I'm good to move on to We Are Free Men. And much like Messenger Bird's song, this was one I would say maybe this past year. So before the podcast, before anything, I think it ended up popping up on my radar. and I really, really enjoyed the song. We had, I don't want to say we had a debate, but we were talking about who is singing along with Connor, because the liner notes are for the EP as a whole and not track by track. So we see many places that say it's Simon Joyner, some others that say, no, you're stupid, it's Tim Kasher. And people feel very passionately on both ends. Like, so on Genius, it says, this is Simon Joyner. But then I went to a YouTube video, and I mean, what did I expect from YouTube comments? Am I right? But literally, it's just like back and forth. Like, again, you're dumb if you think this is dot, dot, dot. I mean, Tim Kasher isn't even credited at all on this EP. The only other, like, there are a couple other people credited for voice. One possibility I thought was maybe it's Andy LeMaster, but I'm inclined to believe that it is Simon Joyner. I'm sure there are people listening that are going to be like, yeah, like I'm a huge fan of Simon. Like this is definitely him or something, or like this is decidedly not him. But I think it was curious how we just don't have an answer.
We really don't. And we legitimately spent, I think, like a half hour sort of like, all right, I guess I'll jump to the Spotify page. And I'm not a huge, not that I have anything against them, but I'm like not a huge Simon Joyner fan. And so I started like just jumping around tracks. And I'm like, yeah, I think this does sound like it could be Simon Joyner. But when I first heard this song, no, like not knowing any of the like the track credits or anything like that, I swore it was Tim Kasher. And more than I would have guessed, I had said off recording to Chris, like, you play A Line Allows Progress, A Circle Does Not, and this song, and you tell me one of these features Tim Kasher, I'm going to pick We Are Free Men. Because it's just, to me, it sounds more like it could be him than whatever was on A Line Allows Progress.
Yeah. So interesting, for sure. So tweet at us with hashtag Simon or Tim.
Yell at us. Tell us how stupid we are for making such a big deal about something that's probably really straightforward.
Yeah, right? something that's not straightforward, is the pickle that our narrator has themselves in the beginning. The future splits its intangibles, an unknown set of variables, a path that splits infinitely up ahead. And I get this, like this entire first, I guess, two verses, because it's split amongst the two singers, however you want to kind of break it up. But I get this, that decision paralysis and this kind of apathy, right? Like, I don't know what to do. I just want to lay down, man. I do not have the mental energy for this. It's time better off sleeping in your bed, or maybe just walking around a mall, just completely conked out of your mind, because at least you're in motion, even if your mind is a million miles away, thinking about whether it's like your future and all the options you have, or a specific decision that you have to make that you feel like has no right answer.
Agreed. And I think that the pondering about questions that don't have answers and questions that are kind of too big to contain in, and all of those, as the lines say, like all those different paths that one can choose from, that line of like the infinite paths, and then that's time spent better sleeping in your bed or wide awake in a shopping mall, trying clothes on from off the wall. And it's, to me, there's the tension of pondering possibility versus actually living life.
Yeah, and I mean, that is something that we all really can struggle with from time to time. You know, it can feel like you're in this impossible bind, like, where do I go? What do I do? And it is going to leave anybody kind of feeling sapped of energy, right? Because you're burning so much in your head that it's just like, what else could I be focusing on? And you kind of lose sight of all that. And I think it is interesting too how he brings back the it's nothing that no doctor's gonna fix. You know, I know a disease that these doctors can't treat. So it's kind of, again, maybe that recurring theme of these issues that you feel are not fixable because maybe they've been around for a while and you've tried and tried and failed and failed. And, you know, you start to get discouraged, which I think is a natural feeling, but you keep trying, right? That's the hope. That's the goal, that, knock on wood, that there's some kind of connection to keep you trying. So in a sense, it's like, we are free men, and of course that's meant to be universal, but it seems like we're free to be bored and tired and, you know, and free to pretend that we are something more palatable to the outside world, which doesn't sound all that attractive. But moving on from there, the next verses, really, it's again those same mixed feelings with fame, and basically saying it doesn't solve anything. It's just the thing. It's just a part of my identity. So regardless of all of these accolades and everyone patting your back, it kind of goes back to that adage, right? Like, money doesn't solve problems. I mean, of course it helps. You know, that's kind of been the addendum people put there as we talk about privilege and that kind of thing. But Connor and his mystery partner on the song basically singing to that effect of yeah, you know, it sure, it feels nice to be recognized, but it's also kind of suffocating in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you're referring to they pat your back bruised with their accolades and all four walls are trophy case, but that doesn't make it less any less of a cage.
Yeah.
Right. And I do like that in that same stanza, you can make it all less difficult by embracing the ephemeral. And I think that might kind of be the solution to these philosophical problems brought up in the song, where there is that tension of, you know, being bored and putting on masks and costumes and kind of referencing all of the other tensions that have been throughout the other albums of like reconciling these different personas that you have. But if you just embrace the fact that, as you say, is part of you and that it really is transient, it, you know, how many times in our lifetime, whether you were aware of it or not, did you discard a personality, or you got rid of like a version of yourself? And you probably have done that several times and didn't even notice. There were just parts of you left behind. So if you just embrace the fact that this is what it is to be free, in a sense, that you don't have to stay in that trophy cage case. Well, it is kind of as he says, it is a trophy cage. You don't have to stay in that cage, because eventually you'll just cycle through these personalities, these masks, these costumes. And I guess there is a freedom in accepting that.
I do wonder, though, with embracing the ephemeral, because I read this your way as well, like kind of living in the moment, embracing the brevity of life, of moments, of the happy moments, but also sometimes the sad moments too, right? Some stick around and some are more brief. But I also wonder too if there is a danger, right? Because, you know, you want to talk about balance and embracing the ephemeral maybe too much, of like that kind of fuck it attitude, like whatever, I'm just going to get drunk, I'm just going to get high, like whatever it is. You know, again, moderation, whatever. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, you got drunk one time? You did three marijuanas? Oh my God. But like, it's when it becomes a cycle, it becomes a pattern. So like, I'm bringing this up as two different options, and I don't know which one it is. But I think both are potentially valid interpretations of that, of embracing the ephemeral. But I think it is an extremely important part in terms of the latter context of living in the moment. I think that is hugely important, and potentially what Connor is saying, kind of as you said. So I'm saying what you said about what Connor is saying sounds good.
Gold sticker for me. Life, there are parts of life that are ephemeral, and there are parts of life that do strictly remain in your memory because the thing comes and goes. And I think that can be reinforced by the final lines of the song. Your body's gone, but angel, you will live. And you could be talking about a literal person, but you can also be talking about, you know, a past life or a past version of yourself or a past version of somebody who's still alive.
Right, right. Kind of the song as a whole, I think I kind of read it as a song for the ones we've lost. In not so much a despondent way, but in a, you know what, a toast, let's move on, let's carry them with us. But like, you know, what, like I said, one for the ones we've lost. You know, your body's gone, angel, you will live. Those friends that you shared a cup, you know the taste, you know, those folks. I don't know. But that's kind of the vibe I get, because it is triumphant at the end. And it is this kind of like beautiful marching of like, it feels like you're reaching some sort of absolution at the end of the song.
And which is funny, because it's like not the first marching type song that we get, right?
Yeah.
As far as like, I don't know, like battle theme is not the right term. It's just something to like motivate you. I don't know. I'm not doing justice to what you just said, but yeah, I think it's definitely, again, not to completely take the teeth out of everything you just said, but it does feel like a pour one out for our fallen homies kind of song.
Yeah.
And on a serious note, it does have that melancholy of, you know, that recontextualizes the line of like, because if it's really all just physical, then my memory is immaterial. So why do I remember you? Like, if your body's gone, but angel, you will live in my memories. Mm-hmm. So it's coming to term with, I guess the paradox of accepting the transience and how ephemeral things are, but at the same time, knowing that in a sense, as long as you're around to remember it, it's permanent.
Well, I mean, if we are talking about embracing the ephemeral, might as well move on to Loose Leaves, huh? Because I think this is a song almost like a culmination of that. And I think in a very positive way, you know, maybe not line for line, everything is like, oh, this is great, this is awesome. But this is a song about just getting through the day, man, about surviving, and how do you keep going when it sometimes feels like you're running on empty? And what better way, right, than bracing the ephemeral?
No, I agree. I completely agree with your analysis of what the song ultimately represents. And I kind of find the song funny. In like, it does have some funny lines in it. Not like a, oh, ha ha, I'm like rolling on the ground laughing or anything like that. But like,
R-O-F-L-M-A-O.
But also it's kind of funny too within the context of the whole album. Because I honestly, I'm sorry, I'm so fried, I don't remember whether I actually said this in the episode, and I'm keeping this in the podcast because it's kind of funny that I honestly can't remember what happened like 30 minutes ago. But
yeah, 30 minutes, beginning of the episode, buddy.
Chris, they don't have to know. They don't have to know how much editing we do. No, we do a lot of editing. It was probably like 2 hours ago that I may have said the thing I'm about to say. But how Loose Leaves and Messenger Bird Song are in a sense opposites, because and I think the last song is that divide, is that thing that kind of flips that narrative. because it, as you say, it is about just like getting through the day and kind of just being okay with things that are not so okay, and not in like the unhealthy way of like, oh, I just need to be okay with this because I have no choice, but rather seeing the situation. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, I'll point out the line that I think is really funny. We're all too busy working, entertaining ourselves. 40 hours television and prescription pills. Will I take two a day to make my brain behave? It never does, but who's to say? At least my doctor gets paid. Like, that's, it's funny. And it's, but it's also kind of like, in its grim way, kind of uplifting. Like, yeah, you can just, sometimes you gotta look at shit and just laugh.
Yeah,
like, what else are you, especially these days of all days, sometimes you just got to look at the world and be like, it's fucked, but it's kind of funny at the same time.
Yeah, it's like a jeering acceptance of
yeah.
like the way things are. Yeah, for sure. I think I had said this before we started recording, but this is up there with like one of my top five, maybe top 10 Bright Eyes songs. I really, really like this. I know we're kind of running high on time, but I really want to mention this. So my power had gone out a little while ago, and I dug through my stuff because I knew I had this dinky little MP3 player and battery operated, so I knew I could listen to it. And so I had a few Bright Eyes songs on there. Of that, A Perfect Sonnet, Bowl of Oranges was on there, but also, I mean, Something Vague, of course. I mean, if you don't want to get crazy, I can't forget that one. But Loose Leaves was one of them. So like, this has really been a song that I've loved since getting into Bright Eyes. And I feel like the only reason I would have heard it is if it was one of those LimeWire songs when I was just picking songs at random that said Bright Eyes. Must have been one of them. And there's just something, I mean, it's just very, very upbeat and it's moving. And, you know, you really do just want to bob your head and you're like, yeah, I feel this. I feel this. And it's that embrace of just that, I think I said it before, but that like, fuck it feeling. You know, it's important to have that sometimes. That, you know, that is embracing the ephemeral and living in the now. It's just like, you know what? Tomorrow is tomorrow. What happened earlier happened earlier. Like, I just want to hang out, man. Like, I just want to chill.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to disappear again into a summer's bliss. Of staying out, sleeping in, and getting drunk with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. And this kind of like, almost like wishing you could go back and like to have that time where you could enjoy yourself. Like, you know, like when you were in school and that's it. Like June comes, or like, you know, whenever your school year ends and the summer hits and you just get to do whatever you want, really. And rather than live in this capitalist hellscape, right, where you work 40 hours a week, at least 40 hours a week, a lot more in many cases, and you have 2 days to yourself. So sometimes you just kind of need to find the little things to kind of rejuvenate yourself over those couple of days, which we have decided are so sacred, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a very, as we've been saying, like laid back attitude towards not laid back things. And I think that's what shows the marked difference between Messenger Bird song and this one, where I mean, it's arguably the same, a similar shitty situation of like, you know, not necessarily being in control of a particular situation, like that bird being blown in a storm, but learning to just sort of go with the storm instead of necessarily, you know, not necessarily complaining about it. Like just the attitude towards the relationship in the song. I'm trying to find the exact, so that's fine. Yeah, come by. We'll take the afternoon off. We can kiss and undress. Or if you want, just talk. You're my girl. I like your style. Just imagine all the time we could kill. It's not, it doesn't feel malicious. It doesn't feel like somebody's trying to take advantage of the other person one way or the other. And you could argue that in Messenger Bird's song, they're both kind of taking advantage of each other.
Right.
In different ways, of course. But then there's also this casualness of like, it can be about the sex, or we could just talk. Like it feels more, this feels more mature, despite the fact that it feels a little more like loose and like, yeah, whatever, bro, like hippy dippy kind of stuff. It feels more of a mature relationship, that it doesn't necessarily have to be about the sex. It's casual in the way that, you know, if the relationship is working and it's easy, that's how it should be working, in my humblest of opinions.
Right. And I think that is the maturity of it, right? There's no need to force it. Yeah, just like what you said. So going back to the first lines of the song, I think this is, again, another really beautifully written couple of lines. The stories are in the soil, loose leaves cover the ground. And I kind of made my joke earlier about loose leaves, but like, that is, I think, what he's referencing. I think he's referencing loose leaf paper along with like loose leaves and the forest floor, which I think is just like really creative, really kind of cool. But I think also what he's saying is a setup for everything else, of maybe no longer trying to reach the highest heights. Like, if I could take them down off of that mountain shelf we used to climb, but no one tries to go up that far now, maybe just kind of like, I think this is less of a sad way of saying I can never be as good as I want it to be. And I think this is more of like an acceptance of, you know what? I don't need to be number one. I don't need to be the best. I just, you know, want to be okay. I just want to live my life and be free and be happy. So I think that's part of like what this song speaks to for me, because we also kind of get it in those last lines. This, when he says, I'm not saying that I know what I want, but I know what I don't. I don't want to rot in my room and never know what could have been. And so there's just kind of this resigned acceptance and not an unhappy one, an unforced acceptance of, you know what? I don't have all the answers, but I'm slowly working it out. I know one thing. I don't want to rot in this room. And it feels to me like that song that you sing when you are feeling good, but then maybe get disappointed in later when it doesn't come to fruition. Like, but maybe I'm just hearing that because that's that's how it happens for me. I listen to this. I'm like, yeah, everything's going to be, oh, I'm just going to accept the way things are. And then I'm like, oh, wait, never mind.
I think that this song, like in a similar vein, like kind of brings this whole EP full circle, as far as like I see the progression from the first song. So there's the line in the previous stanza where life's a slippery slope and regret being the steepest hill, and he doesn't want to rot in his room and never know what could have been, but believe what everyone else tells me is true. And then you circle back up to the final stanza of Balance Beam, where he's talking about discarding the you know, navigation tools and maps and stuff made by other people, and how he's gonna like forge his own path. And I guess like, if you wanted to wrap this EP up with like a nice theme, I think that's it. Like,
yeah, yeah,
go your own way. Know that nothing really lasts forever, for better or worse. And maybe it's better to go your own way, do your own thing, and sort of try and fail to create these different personas, knowing that, like people in your life, these things will come and go, and what you choose to hold on to is, you know, your choice entirely. And some of it is not like people leaving your life, but it's better just to go with the flow and accept it as it is.
Obviously there is one more track on this, which is just the untitled track. It's just a minute where you kind of hear that. Oh, I was so proud of my description of it. Ethereal drone that we'll hear later as Lifted starts off. I think it is. I actually really like that. I mean, I've talked about how I like ambient music and drone music. So like I could probably just listen to that sound all day and really enjoy it. But this is a very clear lead in to what we will be hearing. We know as well, there are two songs on the vinyl release of this EP, Out on the Weekend, which is a Neil Young cover, and Amy and the White Coat. But we kind of were talking about it and decided that it wasn't worth going over the cover, since this is really about Connor's lyrics. And Amy on the White Coat is a song that's on Noise Floor, so we can cover it whenever we get to that album. But this EP, we probably talked about it a little bit more than we anticipated. But I think what's interesting is it just because I think we are letting ourselves go a little free, which I enjoy, because we are kind of digging in song by song of like what it is we really, really love about Bright Eyes.
Absolutely. And I think also the I think us letting ourselves off, you know, like loosening the leash a little bit is nice for our creativity. Because I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't really have all that many notes for this album. But just same the fact here, that we can like bounce off of each other, and we ended up going on for way longer than we thought, just because we gave ourselves that license to sort of kind of go nuts with it, felt nice. It felt cool just to like, you know, come up with ideas on the spot and bounce them off of each other until like we came up with something a little more coherent.
So connorsbasement.com/support. Just consider being a patron, no pressure, you know, it's all good. It's all copacetic. We're not like struggling. We're not starving, nothing like that. So please don't feel as though our livelihoods are at all dependent on this podcast. It's for fun. And, you know, the couple of extra bucks for uploading extra hours is not a problem. But if you do want to support the podcast, please feel free. And check it out on our website. That's the spiel. Not gonna turn on the screws too much.
Yeah, we do this for fun. And you know, you don't support us, and we just, you know, we just stop the podcast until you give us money. No.
Kind of a little different approach than I had, but I guess that's what keeps us interesting.
As Chris is saying, you know, if you got the available funds and you want to, you like what we do and you want to throw us that the little extra help out to keep the lights on and allow us to run our mouths longer than we probably should, we would super appreciate it. But if you can't, then that's fine too. Thanks for hopping by and joining us. We still appreciate you.
Well, Jesse does. I don't have an opinion on the matter. You're all right.
I mean, to be honest, I'm lying. I couldn't care less. No.
Please give us your money. Also, we don't care about you. So
what are we, the U.S. government?
Got him. Bazinga. So
what are we, the capitalist hellscape we live in?
True that. Connor would have something to say about that. So that being said, hashtag rock the vote. I don't think that's a thing anymore, but go vote. vote.org. I think that's the site. Yeah. Google voting. Seriously, like, you guys know how the internet works. You're listening to this podcast, and that's all we have for this album. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about our impressions of the new album. That is something that people have asked us to do, and they want us to do a deep dive. We kind of talked and we came up with a compromise that we do really want to save it for discography order and do it last. But we need a little bit of time before Lifted comes out because we do want to talk about it. We have a lot of notes to write, and we need quite a bit of time to edit, as we learned with Fevers and Mirrors. So we're going to do kind of another quote-unquote mini episode, which ended up being longer than most of our other episodes. Basically, another raw episode, and just kind of discuss our impressions and our feelings on the album without going as in-depth. So, you know, compromise is a sign of a happy marriage, and hopefully you're just as in love as us.
I mean, if it's a fair thing for me to do right now to sort of like whet your appetite for this podcast, I've got some hot takes about about Down in the Weeds, and I might draw some hate. You might hate me for some opinions I've got about this album. So, you know, get those pitchforks ready, because I've got some scalding hot takes.
Well, I, for one, can't wait, because I don't know if it's possible for me to hate you more, but I'm always glad to try.
Chris, we'll dig this hole as deep as possible.
Right down to the sub-basement. So, from all of us here in Connor's basement, thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. We were able to keep the runtime down this time, so an hour and 20 minutes or so for five songs, really four, compared to 4.5 hours for Fevers and Mirrors. So we hope you enjoyed listening to it. We'll be following up with some new stuff pretty soon. We're gonna talk about the new album, just kind of give some overall thoughts on it. And then, of course, then we'll go into our discussion of Lifted and kind of a full-blown episode. So thanks so much again to our patrons, Goldie, Mom, Lad. Thanks so much, everyone. Again, at Connor's Basement, Instagram, Twitter, and we'll catch you on the next episode.